Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
When I look at our defense just throughout training camp, these guys are really, they're competitive. They're edgy. They play together. And I see a really good unit, like, gelling together defensively. They're making a lot of plays, and they're playing with enthusiasm as well. Not only just the enthusiasm, but they're really executing very well. And that's, you know, credit to those guys really putting in the work with their coaches to being on the detail. So they're doing an outstanding job.
They're doing an outstanding job. Welcome in, everybody. Live from West Virginia in our Airbnb, day 11 of Texans training camp, day 2 here in West Virginia. We will be out there today at the Greenbrier. Okay, right off the top, welcome in Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. We're with you till 8 o'clock today. Today's our last two-hour show. Back to 4 hours tomorrow. D'Amico Ryans, at least if he's talking about yesterday, maybe he's talking more, Seth, about the generalities of camp.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's talking about yesterday, he is way underselling what the defense did yesterday.
Oh, it was man, they were a machine. They were a vicious force. It was like the Globetrotters coming in to play against a little league team.
Oh my God.
It was pretty impressive. It would be so much fun to watch if it was a joint practice.
Yeah.
Versus another team. It was against the Texans offense.
Yeah.
This is what I want to say off the bat. Listen, everybody, listen, if you're out there, just you gotta toughen up a little, okay? Some of you guys out there, you hear reports that the Texans offense had a rough day at practice, and immediately you're like, oh, I can't believe people are being this negative about the Texans. I can't believe, oh, they're all alarmed that the Texans offense had a bad day. No, they had a bad day. What do you want me to do? You want me to feed you candy? You want me to tell you lies? You want me to tell you that grandma's going to live forever? No, she's going to die. Okay? You come here for the truth. Damn it.
And the truth is, yesterday, they were.
Both your grandmas died offensively yesterday.
Yeah, man. A lot of grandmas dying. And that's what I teased on the tweet. I said that the defense was snatching souls. It made me think they are an 11-headed Undertaker is what they are right now. This is the music that I hear underneath the entire practice yesterday. Just doomy Undertaker music as Azeez Alshire is intercepting C.J. Stroud. C.J. Gardner-Johnson's getting a pick six on C.J. Stroud. Jalen Petrie should have had a pick against C.J. Stroud. Davis Mills interception to E.J. Speed's interception of Davis Mills.
E.J. Speed had a nice one, yeah.
E.J. Speed is a long, rangy-looking dude, and he's like jumping over and scooping it out of a guy's hands. Nick Neiman getting in on the act with the third string. A lot of turnovers.
Did you mention Azeez Alshire's?
I did. Yeah,
you did.
Yeah.
I lost track. It was fun because the final 2 minute drill, you know, the ones, the twos, the threes go, every single quarterback threw an interception.
Pick. And to me, and we're going to hear from D'Amico on the offense in just a second. I would say, as much as D'Amico was maybe underselling the defense, he's probably maybe erring to the side of optimism on the offense, which he's supposed to do. I get it.
Right.
And the offense has had good days. I want to be very clear. They've had good days in camp. Yesterday was not one
that
of
was
them.
The point I was trying to make before I had to tell everybody that the grandmas were going to die someday was that, the bad days happen and then you see how they rebound. I think the offense has done a good job in this camp a few times of having a bad day, coming back, showing some improvement. The defense had some wrinkles out there yesterday that may have surprised and flummoxed the offense, so we'll see how the offense responds.
Yep, they sure did. So we'll hear from D'Amico in just a second. Defense really good. I think the thing that was just jumped out at me, I think I was standing next to you where you and I were talking about this at the end of practice. I'm like, these look like two units, the defense and the offense. And I'm not talking like first string. I'm talking the whole defense gathered on one sideline. The whole offense still in the middle of the field wondering what the hell just happened for the last hour and a half.
Yeah.
And the body language, the energy was so drastically different. Like the defense was jumping around, energy level high. The offense looked like they looked like they were ready to go to the funerals for all the grandmas you just killed.
It was funny. The dead grandmas.
Yeah.
As D'Amico was calling everybody up, it looked like the defense just found out that they were going to Sizzler. You know? And we're going to Sizzler.
Yeah.
Doing a dance about it. The offense, it looked like they looked like they were Abraham's son Ishmael, who just learned that he was going to be circumcised.
That's right.
Like, oh, this is... Guys, yeah,
45 circumcisions coming.
Yeah. When we go into the locker room.
Line up.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. So that was, to me, that was the theme yesterday. Like the defense, they've won days before. That was a dominant performance by the defense yesterday across all first string. There were some moments for the offense. Here's D'Amico Ryans. He's still excited about the offense.
In the same vein, as I said, for the defense, our offense is getting better. That's training camp. I talk about it all the time. I'm not just throwing out a term, but when I talk about iron sharpening iron, if everybody brings their best every single day, we will all get better. We're still one team. We're going to go out and compete against another team. We are making each other better here. Our offense is making our defense better. Defense is making our offense better. And that's what training camp is all about. So I'm very, excited to see where our guys are. And really, I'm excited to see them go play against someone else. It's becoming that time of camp where it starts to get a little chippy. Guys are tired of going against each other. So I'll be excited, when the end of the week comes and we're able to go against Minnesota.
Yeah, and we know that Minnesota's offensive starters are going to play. Some Minnesota divulged that J.J. McCarthy will get some snaps. So you wonder if, the Texans offense versus that Vikings defense, they had some issues last year. Mm-hmm. Some of you might recall. I would like the Texans starters to be able to go up against that defense, which is going to be way more vanilla in the preseason than you see in the regular season. But to see how they fare and how they work in this new system with CJ having more command, it's a big test and a challenge. So even maybe it's only two series, but I would love to see it. And just really what I want to see is physical play out of the offensive line, because that's what they're focused on. You can very much see in practice and just by virtue of Nick Cayley talking about it and the offensive linemen talking about it, they want to be able to impose their will on defensive lines and linebackers in the run game. So let's see if you can do it versus a really good defense.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the offensive line a little bit, because that was another theme from yesterday. And it happened early in camp. The very first play for the ones in team drill, 11-on-11, Cam Robinson goes down with a leg injury. That'll be something to try to find out today if we have more information on Cam Robinson. He's been there starting left tackle. He's been the first string left tackle throughout virtually the entirety of camp. He goes out with an injury, and then what got interesting was Ariante Ursary, the rookie, moves from right to left. Okay, that makes sense. In a normal NFL world, if that were week four of the regular season, in would come your swing tackle, you would think, a backup tackle. And instead of elevating Blake Fisher, now maybe this is just something where they wanted to keep continuity and keep the same guys together, but they move Titus Howard from right guard out to right tackle, which he's played before. Maybe that has something to do with it. And they bumped Juice Scruggs in at right guard at first string. And if that sequence of events were to have happened in the regular season, and I got to believe that maybe this is still the case right now in August, is that they trust an offensive line with Juice Scruggs at right guard more than they do their backup right tackle to move up and play actual right tackle with the ones. Blake Fisher did not play right tackle with the ones yesterday.
I thought, if anything, it was just an indication of, oh, man, the depth on this offensive line is still very, very scary. I mean, the starters themselves, because we've spent time with it and we've become accustomed to, okay, this is the guys who are probably going to roll out. You got to remind yourself that, yeah, there are a lot of question marks about this offensive
line. Jake Andrews has played like 70 snaps.
Right. Jake Andrews is
he's the first string center.
It looks like he's going to be the starter. He's played 76 snaps in the NFL. Jarrett Patterson is the crusty old veteran
who's been here 2 years.
Yeah, and by the way, Jay, I tried to look at that through this lens yesterday.
Yeah.
Is a nose tackle, which guy would I not want to play against? Or which guy would I choose to play against? I think right now, physically, Andrews is more impressive in the run game. I think I'd have a harder time versus him than Jarrett Patterson. Mm-hmm. Pass protection, there's a little bit of iffiness on both of them.
Yeah.
But for a team that really wants to run the ball, I think they like the physicality of Jake Andrews.
Yeah, I mean,
don't let your head blow up, Jake, all right? I'd still beat you. Mm-hmm. It would just be a little bit more difficult with Patterson.
Higher degree of difficulty. Yeah. That is something crazy that we really – haven't dug into is like, okay, this is what they're going. This is what we're going with at center, like a guy who's got very little NFL experience. And it's not like he's, you know. And for those who like to go back, well, he's got very little NFL experience, but he's a first round or second round reclamation project. Like that's probably what they're talking. Like if they're talking about Kenyon Green in Philly, not like they need Kenyon Green to come through in Philly, but that's what they're probably talking about. This guy was a 15th overall pick. We get him in here, and maybe we get something out of him. Jake Andrews, I think, was undrafted. Was he a fourth-round pick?
Yeah, he wasn't.
Okay, he was an undrafted. Yeah. He's just played about as much as an undrafted.
Yeah, so there are a lot of question marks. So there's a lot on Cole Popovich and on Nick Caley and just on them being able to operate as a unit better than they did last year.
Yeah, here's D'Amico on the offensive line shuffle that took place yesterday.
As you see with our offensive line, you'll see different guys in different spots. You've seen that from OTAs. You've seen that throughout training camp. No different, no extra news to report or anything about it today. Is just our guys are moving around just like they've done kind of all camp.
Okay. And obviously yesterday's was kind of a forced one because of the injury to Cam Robinson.
But it was the Texans offense came out with the twos first, second stringers, and Cam Robinson was running with the second team.
Yeah.
So that's where it was already,
they're mixing,
you can tell there's already going to be a little bit more competition, and they want to see Ursary get some, and it might have been as simple as they want to see Ursary get some snaps on the left and the right.
And they've been throughout camp, they've been starting Ursary with the ones at right and with the threes at left.
Yeah.
So they've been doing that.
So you might have just wanted to get some more work with Ursary against better competition.
Titus bumping out to right tackle was a wow moment, though, yesterday. As far as you can get wow moments in the offensive line in training camp, like, oh, okay, well, this, because we hadn't seen it yet in camp.
Yeah.
You hadn't seen it yet.
I think with Ursary, just my quick notes on him is that there's times just yesterday where he looked like a rookie at times, but on his good reps, he had some nice pass protection reps I saw versus Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. You can see the upside there. I mean, he's just got great length. He moves really well and quickly for a guy who's as big as he is. There's just some things he needs to clean up. Like, he's a huge guy who can absorb contact, but he lets guys into his body a little too much. But these are things that 2 or 3 weeks into training camp, your rookie year, I'm not worried about. I think there's definitely a lot of upside there.
That pick needs to work out because apparently Josh Simmons is killing it in Kansas City, and they used the 32nd overall pick on him.
Yeah, and the Texans, and Josh Connerly.
Texans tried to move back in.
Josh Connerly, the offensive tackle, is in Washington, and he's probably not going to play right away because they have Laremy Tunsil. But, like, there are other people that could Kenyon Green this situation.
Yeah.
Kenyon Green is not doing so hot in Philadelphia, apparently.
Stoutland, the magic, he hasn't sprinkled the magic Stoutland dust on him yet?
I guess he's barely practiced, so I think maybe he's injured again. He's just injured all the time.
Tradition like
I don't know.
It's a tradition like no other. All right, we should mention, too, Dameon Pierce activated. We'll talk about that. What does that mean to the running back room? I've got a room that I think is going to involve the toughest cut that we'll get to. And we got to circle back to the Astros. They won. Carlos Correa got to go through a handshake line yesterday for the first time as an Astro since the 2021 World Series. So we get you all up to speed on that. Man, it is fun. We are live in West Virginia. We'll be back out at practice today. Practice starting at 9 o'clock Houston time today. Seth and I will be out there. Keep it tuned to here all day long. Keep it tuned on our social media as well. We were posting a ton yesterday. Stay there. Astros update next.
Heyniu had three hits, his first three at-bats coming off the IL. That ball hit hard by Sanchez, and that's going to be a first run of the game for the Astros. Jesus Sanchez against his former team, an RBI double. His first Astros double is against his former team. It's 1-0.
Okay, that was last night. The Astros go on to win 8-2. They get a nice performance from Jason Alexander. That was cool to see. We'll talk about what the pitching situation is going to be for the rest of this Miami series as we come to you live from West Virginia and Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. I bumped in with that for a few reasons. Significant because it was Sanchez's first double as an Astro. Mm-hmm. He had an RBI against his old – that's his first at-bat against his old team. My favorite part of that entire play, though, and that got the Astros a lead – on the heels of a stretch of 18 games where the other team took the lead in every game, the Astros have now scored the first run in 7 straight games. It's one of the weirdest things ever. But my favorite part of this whole thing, you weren't watching that play. You were down the hall. You taking a bathroom break or something. Yeah. And I'm like, Seth, you got to come see this. Jesus Sanchez, who we joked about yesterday, like getting thrown out Altuve style in one of the first games he played as an Astro. Like, oh, he'll fit right in.
His
very first game. Sanchez hits a double, slides in, and is celebrating while standing like 3 feet off the base. He's jumping up and down, and the guy, the Marlin shortstop, is holding the ball
several feet from him,
barely like me to you, like 5 feet away. Like, get on the base, get
he
on the
fits
base,
right in, man.
Oh my God,
he smiles all the time.
He does smile all the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love. And listen, everybody, he's a much better outfielder in general than he's maybe showed in these first few games.
That's what we're told.
He's had a few curious plays.
Neither of us have watched a lot of Marlins baseball
in the outfield, but he's exactly what the team needs. He can hit left-handed.
Yep.
He takes care of right-handed pitching, and he can play all three outfield positions.
There you go.
And he smiles a lot.
Smiles, man. He's happy.
It's very important to be happy all the
these days,
Sean.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Here was Joe Espada yesterday after the game. Again, Astros win 8-2. That was nice to see. On Sanchez's contributions.
No, he was part of that, our meeting today. He spoke in there. He knows that club well. He knows Alcantara well. He gave us some tips, and let's not ask him about them. Okay. But this kid wants to be here. He's happy to be here. When I say here with us, coming back home and putting, having that performance, I'm sure he's satisfied.
That's nice. He gave all the cheat codes to the Marlins. Have been one of the hottest teams in baseball.
Yeah.
They're 20-10 over their last 30 games going into last night.
Yeah, like a six series streak of either winning or not losing a series.
Yeah, and we know what that's like.
Yeah, I know. Six, whatever.
Hey, Marlin fans, it's not going to last.
Yeah, don't worry, Marlin fans. Yeah. There's a good chance you're going to lose
ends this week.
Eight of your next 10.
That's right.
Yeah, starting tonight, damn it.
Including your next two. Yeah, that's right.
Altuve, too, after getting off to a bad start, mishandled a very easy to handle ground ball to allow a runner on first, but then had a bunt, successful bunt.
Yeah,
and then
on
that same trip around the bases, had a steal immediately.
Yeah,
afterwards.
Man. Yeah. So that was good to see. Good. Carlos Correa gets to experience a win again in an Astros uniform for the first time in almost 4 years. So that was cool. And Jason Alexander, that to me was probably the biggest story last night, is anytime you're getting outings like this, against a hot baseball team, from guys that you're bringing up for spot starts, and Jason Alexander pitched six shutout innings. The biggest thing was getting out of a bases-loaded jam in the sixth when the game was still 5-0. You know, that's a comfortable lead, but the bases are loaded. All of a sudden, you know, the run that's coming to the plate, they can get within a run with one swing of the bat, and Jason Alexander able to get out of that bases-loaded jam in the sixth. Here was Joe Espada on that.
Yeah, he made pitches. He was you could see the fatigue, but he was still making good pitches, and he really stepped up. He really did. It's someone who we've been asking him to do, get on that plane and come back and give us outings, and he's been able to do a great job every time he steps on the mound.
That's true. It's one thing when you just get in your car and drive up to Daikin Park from Sugar Land to start a game. Like, here's your itinerary. Here, get on a flight, and we need you. Not that he's flying in a like the Red Baron in an outdoor plane or something like that.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But it is easier just to drive up to the ballpark. So that's good.
And then on the opposite side, Sandy Alcantara had a no hitter going through three innings.
Perfect game. Yeah.
Except that, I mean, you wouldn't have expected the no hitter was going to continue. The Astros were the Astros were rifling the ball directly at Rays players the first three innings. They had so much hard contact.
I want to see a no-hitter like that someday. Teams are just hitting rockets
just
at guys.
Out
27
lucky.
Outs, and it's like 25 of them exit velos of 110.
Yeah, average exit velo, mock speed.
Yet
he had a no-hitter going. So, except that after watching the Astros for the last 10 games, I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, yeah, they're gonna end up giving Alcantara a no-hitter with just like this.
Yeah,
that somehow they're not gonna figure out a way to get any runners on base, which might be just as well because during that losing stretch, they were leaving runners on base all over the place. Double digit runners left on base was very, very frequent. So this is versus a team that is it's not your older brother's Marlins. This is they've been on a little bit of a tear, even though they've got a 500
baseball
record.
Team. Yeah.
I mean, Alcantara could have been an Astro, except that the Marlins are kind of stuck in that spot of like, oh, do we sell? Or I guess we can't really sell these days with the extra playoff.
They kind of Sanchez coming to the Astros notwithstanding. I mean, I think they were viewed more as a team that kind of stood pat.
Yeah.
More so than dumping guys. But so the pitching situation now for the rest of this series is the Astros are going to start an opener today, get a couple innings, and then do a bullpen game. And then Spencer Arrighetti gets his first start since breaking his hand in Seattle in early April. in a freak accident. Here was Joe Espada yesterday after the game on how the Astros are going to handle the pitching the rest of this series.
We're going to have an opener, so I can share with you that Spencer will open Wednesday.
Opener tomorrow, Spencer opens Wednesday.
Wednesday, correct.
Spencer.
Righetti will start on Wednesday.
Okay.
Tomorrow will be an opener.
Spencer starts
on Wednesday. Correct. Is that?
Well, you said Righetti opens Wednesday. But I didn't know if he was going to be an opener too.
No, he's a starting pitcher. Okay. He is an opener.
Okay.
Tomorrow will be a reliever, which is an opener.
Okay.
There you go. All right. Thank you. Good night.
Okay. Right. That was a bit of disconcerting audio right there.
Espada. Let's.
Does Joe Espada not know what an opener is?
He does. The fact that he got sensitive about it, I guess, is.
Spencer Arrighetti is starting the game, and thus he is opening the game.
I'm like, just flat out gone through. We're going with an opener, and then it's going to be a he explained an opener exactly what it was.
Dude,
and he just messed up and called Arrighetti an opener.
Those were perfectly logical questions. By I think I heard Chandler's voice in there.
Yeah.
It might have been McTaggart's voice. I mean, they asked him twice.
Right.
Like we're just reconfirming because you said Arrighetti is
when this isn't a gotcha moment.
No,
we're not trying to get you. We're just wanting clarification.
Had there been no follow up questions to it, you and I would now be going, okay, does Spencer Arrighetti pitch 2 innings or 6 innings today?
Yeah, yeah. So,
and I'm not sure I know.
No, the fact that Espada. The fact that Espada did get a little defensive there tells me that maybe that was a little bit of a Freudian slip. Maybe he didn't want to divulge that Arrighetti's only going to go a couple of innings. So that he kind of backpedaled a little bit aggressively. Yeah,
I would be surprised if he only went a couple innings, only because in his rehab starts, his pitch count got up to where he could do at least 4 or 5 innings.
I'm not going
to
be surprised by a single damn thing with this baseball team, Sean.
Oh, especially the pitching, too.
We find out that Paredes is going to try to make a go at it.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which was interesting.
Lay it out.
Decides he's going to get a PRP injection in his hammy.
Right.
And
rehab it.
And try to rehab it so he could possibly make it back later this season or in the playoffs. This was interesting to me, and I think it's perfect for a Pender poll, Sean.
Okay.
Because in just looking at the replies from Chandler Rome's tweet, I think I saw it from Chandler Rome first, I think fans were split down the middle in terms of some people saying, oh, yeah, hell yeah, good for him. And then the other 50% saying, yeah, good for him, except I really wish this is the kind of thing that ends with, oh, he tries to come back and then injures it even worse and doesn't play at all in 2026.
Yeah.
I think 50% want him to be more conservative and just get ready for next year. There's another 50% that are let's balls to the wall, let's do this thing.
Here's my question. If he were to come back, let's say he rehabs the injury, he comes back in September or October, where do you put him? And I know that, the conventional wisdom is going to say, well, you just slide him over to second base. That's been a problem all year. The talk is he can play second base. The closer it got to them acquiring a third baseman to replace him when he got hurt, and then ultimately they wind up with Carlos Correa, which is that takes it to a whole separate level. But there was more and more trepidation that I saw both around the league and reportedly within the Astros about playing Paredes at second base.
Yeah.
The more the reality of a new third baseman coming in that was as good as Paredes or in that same category of player, the more trepidation there was about him playing second base. So my thing is, if he makes it back before the end of the season, if it's a guy who already were a little iffy on being able to slide over at second base, are you telling me you slide him in cold, having not played there all season, coming off of a hamstring injury?
Right. Well, I think this is where,
because Correa and Pena are your left side of your infield.
But listen, I think I don't want to overthink it. If Paredes comes back, it's not like they're going to be sliding him in as an everyday player. There's going to be some load management there. There's going to be an injury somewhere along the way in the infield. I think that remember when we used to complain about how the Astros have too many good starting pitchers?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, half of them were injured.
Yeah, a good veteran bat.
Yeah.
There on the bench.
He's a better player. Paredes coming back, if he can reasonably play and if it's smart medically to do it, and we don't trust this team to do things we don't trust the medical situation at all. That you just, I don't think of him as, oh, he's going to come back and replace Correa or something. It's that Pena. Look, we've seen Pena 2 days after his return from his rib injury, have to take a break for a hamstring cramp.
Yeah.
Like, it's just extra hands on deck.
Well, and this is where some of the versatility of guys like Urias and especially Dubon, who can play infield and outfield, come in.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's not Paredes versus – maybe it's not, hey, is Paredes your second baseman? Is Paredes a better vet bat to have on the bench than Cooper Hummel?
Right.
That kind of thing.
Or versus a call-up. You know, you can't worry about any of these guys, including Paredes, over Bryce Matthews or Melton at this point. Yeah. That's who you want in the playoffs.
Yep. So Arrigetti is the one who's imminently coming back. He's going to start / open on Wednesday. There's a slew of them that are still going to be in Sugarland.
It'd be like if somebody told me, hey, here's $10,000, and me saying, I don't have that in my investment plan right now, okay? Trying to work with – I wouldn't call up Trajan Wealth and say, hey, guys,
I've got too much money.
Somebody wants to give me $10,000, but I don't want to make you guys work any harder, so I'm going to turn it down.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
That did happen to me once, by the way. I won a $10,000 in groceries at a grocery store.
Oh, really?
But it was one of those things where it was at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I felt bad because I was like, hey guys, can I wait until January to accept this?
What'd they say?
They said, oh, yeah, sure, we get this all the time.
Oh, okay.
And then I felt really bad, so I just ended up giving it to charity. Which I'm always dicey with when you're doing it with a corporation.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I really should have accepted the $10,000 in groceries and then given those charity cards to a charity of my choice.
Yeah.
I never trust that the company is going to actually... Like, okay, so they give me $10,000 in groceries, which to them is probably only like $5,000 in inventory.
Correct, yeah.
Or whatever the deal
retail
is, however
wholesale,
it works
yeah.
out. Yeah. And where I'm like, all right, well, I could probably help somebody else. But anyway.
Yeah.
Hosed me, Sean. They hosed me.
I'm a little disappointed.
I gave it to them for the charity that they had been raising money for.
I see.
So I assume that maybe it all went to,
I think it probably did. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. We were deprived of watching you try to spend $10,000 in groceries in like 3 weeks.
December. Oh, yeah, there was no time limit.
Oh,
in December. No, but if I accepted the gift cards, that would have been like receiving cash at that point.
Oh, I got you for tax purposes.
Yeah, they gave me
for tax. I got you. I thought they were giving you a $10,000 shopping spree with an expiration date of the calendar year.
I should have explained that. Yeah. No, I was worried about the tax implications.
Got you.
I didn't want to mess up my tax.
I got you. Okay. I'm picturing you sticking your arm on the Little Debbie shelf and just sweeping it into a cart. Everything.
That was back when grocery prices weren't necessarily as high as they've been the last couple of years
true.
Or so. And I, these days I'm like, charity. You can go pound sand. I need these eggs. Damn it.
Yeah. $10,000 doesn't go as far as you think it might go in the grocery store these days. You're excited about the egg prices here in West Virginia.
That was Tops in upstate New York. This is a long time ago.
Oh, okay. That was the grocery store?
Yeah.
Yeah. You were excited about the egg prices yesterday at the Food Lion.
No, not – well, at the Food Lion, they were pretty damn good. But when I was driving through West Virginia, there were a couple roadside stands where I saw a dozen eggs for $3.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But the problem is there's no cell phone reception in any of these places. And I never carry cash on me anymore.
Yeah.
So I decided there was no way to I knew they weren't going to accept Venmo.
Right.
So I missed out, man.
They ain't accepting Venmo. They barely have phone reception in this state.
I'm going to load up on the way back to the airport. And I wonder, how many eggs do they allow on a plane?
It's a good question.
Should I put them in my check bag?
713. I would love to see the picture of you opening that bag. Yellow splats everywhere.
Six dozen eggs.
Yeah, man.
I put them in bubble wrap.
Handle with care. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Day 2 of the Texans at the Greenbrier today. Day 11 of training camp. We're already halfway through training camp. It's flying by, man. So we'll have all the observations for you. And in fact, top of the hour, we'll get back to some of our training camp thoughts. Also, top of the hour, there was an article in the Washington Post yesterday. And apparently, if the offensive line room for the Texans was toxic, it ain't this guy's fault. We'll tell you all about that at the top of the hour. We'll go into some headlines, though, coming up next. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Correo with a line drive to left. That'll be down for a hit. In to score Sanchez. Altuve being held up. Astros lead 2-0. Carlos Correa has an RBI single to left.
Is it still a little surreal for you to have Carlos Correa on this baseball team? It is for me still.
It is weird. I mean, there's a whole lot of, there's former Astros who are now current Astros.
Yeah.
And Neris is back. And Neeris is not as...
Singleton was back for like a week.
Yeah. Singleton. Well, he was back for a week, but then previously he was back for a year, but then before that
yeah,
he was
like three times,
for,
yeah.
Yeah. No, but Correa is the one that you never quite expected. It was like, oh, okay, he's going to be one of these guys. If Springer came back, that might be the most surreal one.
Yeah.
It's obviously not going to happen this year or probably anytime.
Especially because I think of all the guys that left... by the way, the Astros win 8-2 last night against the Marlins. This is headlines, but I like this conversation. I think Springer would have been the strangest one because I felt like that was the one that where there was actually some acrimony between Springer and the team because of how they manipulated his service time as an older player.
Yeah.
He didn't hit free agency until he's 31 years old. Now, he did fine. He made $150 million.
And Springer had been through every... He's kind of like Titus Howard with the Texans because Springer wasn't a Luno draft pick.
He was Ed Wade. Yeah.
He had kind of just seen the good, the bad, the ugly of the business
side
of the
business. That's a great analogy, yeah.
So I think... He had made some statements before he ever reached free agency where it didn't sound like he was angry about it, but it was just that he very much understood the business side of things and there was no amount of loyalty to the Astros that somehow needed to be repaid.
Yeah.
Like they had deliberately really messed with his service time and his money, his bottom line because they could, because they were a bad team.
I feel like I Pender pulled this exact topic at some point over the last year. Like, if you could bring back one guy that left in free agency, probably when Bregman was leaving in free agency, I probably put it up like, who would you bring back? Cole, Correa, Springer, or Verlander? Something like that. And I think Springer won that poll, but I'm guessing Correa finished really well, which, again, adds to the surrealness of what's going on right now.
Yeah, and it's nice. It feels good. And I kind of try to check myself in saying, all right, lots of times the thing that feels good isn't the right thing to do. You'll learn in life.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's really the wrong thing to do.
Oftentimes it's the wrong thing,
With Correa, though, I think it is the non-measurable part of it, just the infusion of energy or just the fabric of the Astros culture or that way. I think that is a real thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's a shot in the arm in a lot of ways.
I get like that kind of sports chill thing going when I think of October at-bats with Carlos Correa in an Astro uniform. Like it's the October part.
You're exactly 100% right. Thank you for bringing it back to that. It's Correa being one of the most consistently productive players in the postseason in Major League Baseball history. He's just freakishly consistently good in the playoffs. So whether you want to call it the clutch gene or anything else, it's the Astros, by virtue of having played in so many playoff games, it's not just some small sample size oddity or anything. Correa is nails in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So having that, 100%. It's October. I don't want him to suck until
No.
Obviously, but him in October makes a big difference.
It's so fun to go look. If you ever find a website that's got playoff stats, counting stats by position, like third base, Bregman is way up there. Yeah. Altuve, second base. Correa at shorts. Yuli Gurriel, like the names he's alongside at first base are all-time greats, but he's right in there because he's played 80 games or whatever it is in the postseason. It's crazy.
It's like once you play long enough, it's kind of like Clayton Kershaw, you know?
Yeah.
It got to a point where Clayton Kershaw was bad in the playoffs so many times that even the stat nerds were saying, this is something. This is it's not just flukish.
Yeah.
The stat nerds will usually be the first to say, hey, small sample size.
Yeah.
Nah, don't read too much into it. Now, on the flip side,
Correa
has been the opposite. He's been really good in the playoffs for a long time.
Yep, that'll be exciting. They win 8-2 last night, so they take the first game in this series with the Marlins. The Astros will start an opener, yet to be named, I guess, tonight, a bullpen arm. It's going to be a bullpen game, and then Spencer Arrighetti will start in the series closeout on Wednesday. We're at Texans training camp live here in West Virginia. We are at our Airbnb right now, but we'll be out at the Greenbrier in about an hour and change getting ready for practice number 2 here in West Virginia. Practice number 1 in West Virginia yesterday was marked by dominance on the defensive side of the ball, the likes of which I think we've only seen in one other practice. The defense has won more practices than they've lost. This was one. There's only one other practice I can remember seeing the offense just look this demoralized at the end of practice.
They're going to send Azeez Alshire, one of his cleats, to the Hall of Fame
for this practice
yesterday.
One of the
best defensive performances. He's going to be right up next to Bill Belichick's defensive game plan from the Super Bowl the Giants game.
Yep.
So against the Bills. So
it was good.
That's how good the defense
They
looked.
Were good,
And it really, listen, we're not sitting here saying, all is lost. No, it was just – it was an impressive performance by the defense, and it was kind of a reminder that the offense has work to do. There are some things about what the offense is doing right now that is – it's genuinely – it's really, really hard to establish your physical run game in training camp where you're trying to stay up off the ground.
Yeah.
The double teams can't be just quite as ferocious. And I do see progress in some of those fronts. I just – I want to see it in – preseason games, obviously I want to see it in the regular season, but some of it right now is also the defense. They threw some wrinkles in defensively that I don't think the offense had seen yesterday. The question is, all right, how does the offense respond to that?
Yeah.
In the back and forth, and we've seen that this year during training camp. The offense was taking it on the chin for the first few practices, then all of a sudden they put it together,
yeah,
and they showed some progress. I think there's a good chance that the offense comes out looking a lot sharper today.
The turnovers were a big thing yesterday. They closed out each of the situational drills, first string, second string, third string offense at the end of the two. They each had an opportunity in the two-minute drill at the end of practice. All three of them ended with interceptions. Azeez Alshire in the first string drills. EJ Speed. Yeah. I liked seeing that one because it was a really athletic pick by EJ Speed in the two second string drills. And then Nick Neiman had what I think would have been a pick six in a regular game against Graham Mertz off of a tipped ball. You said yesterday about CJ and the interceptions, and I agree with your take in general that hey, quarterbacks that aren't throwing any interceptions in the preseason, that's not good either because it shows they're not...
They're probably not really taking, like, working on things, kind of feeling where their limits are.
Yeah. How did you fit... CJ threw two picks and a near pick to Jalen Petrie yesterday. Did those picks fit that category?
No, I think that they're the types of interceptions that, okay, you don't just brush off. That it's that, all right, he looked either frustrated or flummoxed,
yep,
or just got surprised perhaps by the one near interception to Jalen Petrie. Looked like the classic, I didn't expect that guy to be there.
Yeah.
You know, that.
And he's had a few of those.
I was watching the actual offensive line, so I just lifted my eyes up to see the very end of the play when CJ throws the interception. But Petrie was probably lurking and kind of popped up into a zone that CJ didn't expect.
Yeah.
So that's the – when you watch from the end zone when the defense is really dialed in, you can see how the quarterback just doesn't have a whole lot of options when they're playing as well, when the defense is playing as well as they are.
The ones that I think fit your category, and CJ had one, it wasn't a pick earlier in camp, but it should have been. Kalen Bullock didn't catch it. But CJ's rolling out to his right and he throws it back across the middle to a covered guy. The ones that I don't mind are the ones where I go, well, he just wouldn't throw that. He'd throw it into the stands in the regular season. Like, the ones yesterday were not that. Like, they were,
you know,
they were jumping routes and things like that.
There's some of them. Do you remember Justin Herbert's interception in the Lions? Was it in the Lions game? No, it was in the Chargers game. The Chargers game Justin Herbert was rolling out to his right and threw it deep across the
Kamari
field.
Kamari picked it
to
off.
To Kamari last year.
Yeah.
And I talked to Kamari about that play yesterday.
Yeah.
Did I not said Kamari? What did I say?
No, you said Kamari.
Okay.
Yeah.
Threw it deep across the field to Kamari. And Kamari was really cool about it. Like, because I kind of asked Kamari, you know, were you kind of surprised that Herbert made that throw?
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, he's a really good quarterback. I knew that he could make that throw, but I also knew the receiver had gotten some ground on him. He said, I knew I had time to make that ground back up and get in phase because the ball was going to be in the air a long time. And I'm still thinking about it, and I went back and watched the play after Kamari talked about it. No, Justin Herbert shouldn't have attempted that throw.
Yeah,
That was a little bit of, man, Justin Herbert in the playoffs has been atrocious in his career and in big games. That's the kind of play. I don't want to see CJ start to be the kind of quarterback that tries to make throws that he shouldn't be making.
Yep, I agree. The other headline with the Texans, Dameon Pierce activated yesterday. This was after practice because he was working out off to the side. He and Christian Harris were both working out on the side, but both look great physically. They're moving really, really well. Dameon Pierce activated. We'll talk about that in the 7 o'clock hour. That running back room is a really interesting one.
They were doing a drill, Dameon Pierce and Christian Harris were, where it looked like they were on pogo sticks. Because they were just bouncing up and down in place.
Yeah.
And it was pretty damn impressive. They looked like kangaroos on a trampoline.
Yeah.
Like they were getting some. And so my first thought was, I don't know how transferable that specific skill is to football, except that physically, Christian Harris and Dameon Pierce look pretty damn bouncy and spry.
They
right
did.
Now.
Yeah,
so
that's
I'm
the
guessing
takeaway.
They're just being extra careful with them.
That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping for sure. So we'll talk about that more in the 7 o'clock hour. The running back room gets Dameon Pierce back. Joe Mixon obviously still out, and he's going to be out for a while. All right, coming up next, The Washington Post did an article about Laremy Tunsil, a long profile about the new left tackle in our nation's capital. And the person coming to Laremy's defense, this is wild. The one person coming to Laremy's defense is the one person that Laremy might have gotten fired.
Mm-hmm.
So we will talk about that. We've got some incredible quotes from this article. If you're wondering why the offensive line was such a disaster last year, we'll reveal some things, I guess, coming up next. All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you live from West Virginia. Just posted a picture of our highly sophisticated studio at our Airbnb on X.
It's a big-time broadcast.
At Sean T. Pendergast. Yeah, I just posted. It is. It's a big-time broadcast.
You know,
it's
real quick for the tech nerds or whomever else in there. Mm-hmm. We're in West Virginia where sometimes, you know, self-service and internet service can be kind of spotty. They have a Starlink here. And
in our Airbnb,
satellite internet. And I knew that it was fast. But when we ran the tests on it, I was kind of blown away by how far they've come compared to old satellite internet.
Yeah.
Because you and I tried to do a show with a satellite link up once, and it was a disaster.
Oh, it was horrible.
With the old way.
Yeah.
This is actually pretty damn impressive.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And they did it for us because we weren't going to get this
Airbnb. They
upgraded it for us. I got with the owners of this Airbnb, and I asked Parker, our boss. I said, hey, what do we need to know about the internet? He said, well, we need these readouts on it, and we need these numbers to be this and that. You can tell I'm very technical.
You run a speed test.
Yeah, I ran a speed test is what I did, and I shared the results with our boss, and he said, no, that's not going to work. And I told the owners that, and they messaged me back on Airbnb, and they said, we just upgraded to Starlink.
Good job, Sean.
And I said, trip on. Let's go.
You got things done.
Hell yeah.
Put your foot down.
Hell yeah. Let's segue over to the Texans offensive line from last year.
Yeah.
This Washington Post article on Laremy Tunsil that dropped yesterday.
The offensive line from last year, which is like the old school DirecTV internet.
Yes.
Yeah. The satellite internet.
That was our first satellite experience.
Where we might as well have been a correspondent in Iraq. Yeah.
Yes.
You would ask a question, and then 7 seconds later, I would give an answer.
That's exactly right.
That was the offensive line.
That was the offensive
year.
Line.
That's what they were kind of operating. They were like, oh, there was the snap count.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, or they would go, let's go. Yeah. And then the ball would get snapped.
And then there was a lag.
Yeah, then there was a 7-second lag between Laremy Tunsil starting to block and the ball getting snapped. So same exact thing. Title of the article, and it's written by, I'll find who wrote it. Laremy Tunsil entered the NFL in infamy. 10 seasons later, he's a total pro.
A total pro.
So you see where this one is going, this article. This was written by someone named Adam Kilgore.
Yeah.
Adam Kilgore wrote this article. I would say the overall, we're not going to go paragraph by paragraph. Chris Strauser, the former offensive line coach for the Texans, is interviewed and probably quoted in this article more than Laremy Tunsil.
He's the star.
Chris Strauser is the focal point of this article almost. And he says that Laremy Tunsil, not the problem. Not the problem at all in that room last year, because he heard the reports of the toxic nature of the offensive line room from Albert Breer. And
I do think that's where the use of the word toxic is where things get kind of dicey.
So you start debating semantics,
right? I think that it's very possible that like Laremy Tunsil wasn't going to be the solution when it came to trying to infuse some kind of some semblance of the swarm mentality onto the offense or in the offensive line room. For where they needed to go. I don't want to say Laremy Tunsil was the problem, but I think at his price tag especially, he wasn't going to be the solution for a lot of wholesale changes that needed to be made.
Yeah, here's some of the quotes from Chris Strauser. Laremy's one of the best guys I've ever coached. At the end of the day, every single day in the last 2 years I worked with that guy, I walked away thinking, quote, this guy's got a good heart, end quote. All right, so far that matches up. I've not talked to anybody who dislikes Laremy Tunsil.
No, I don't think he was a jerk in general or anything.
No. Strauser goes on to say this. By the way, Bobby Slowick, shade alert.
Okay,
you ready? I don't think our room, the offensive line room, was good last year. It was a combination of a lot of things. By no means Laremy being the issue or the main issue. It was a combination of so many things. A lot of guys trying to figure out an offense that, honestly, we were not that well educated in.
Yeah. So that's Bobby Slowick, shade. But also, I mean, Chris Strauser, it's your job to educate your damn self.
Yes.
This is where I get some of the mistakes that were made in these last couple years are all the hallmarks of a first-time head coach just making some mistakes in his hiring process, making Bobby Slowick the offensive coordinator, but then also having an offensive line coach who really wasn't familiar with that type of a scheme.
Yeah.
And then not doing anything to get better at it, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Chris Jouster, it's an excuse in year one, perhaps, when everything's getting to happen on the fly. Educate your damn self.
Yeah.
You know, so many times, guys, and I have no idea what Chris Jouster did with his time in the offseason, but sometimes guys just get to a point where they kind of feel like, I'm the cock of the walk. I've been an NFL head coach. And they stop that process of learning and reinventing themselves.
Well,
I buy that as an excuse for year one.
Yeah.
For year two, educate your damn self.
Well, this is where, this is where we've got to be critical of D'Amico Ryans.
Right, right.
D'Amico Ryans, Bobby Slowick, as it turned out, was not a good hire. You fired him after 2 years.
Yeah.
Chris Strouser was not a good hire, and maybe the signs should have been there, A, when he comes in, not from this system. Okay, so that's something. But your solution is an acceptable one. A smart person would educate themselves. I mean, we're not talking about splitting the atom here. It's football. Educate yourself on it. But I think in the second year for Strouser, when we heard the rumblings after all this fallout, that it turns out he was thinking of retiring.
Going into last season.
Going into 2024. Yeah. Ultimately, you wind up promoting the guy who was in the building already anyways.
Yeah.
In retrospect, it would have made more sense to promote Cole Popovich a year earlier. I don't know if Cole Popovich would have made sense executing Bobby Slowick's system last year. That might not have worked for anybody, given the way Bobby was coordinating things, but it would have been a better solution than having the guy who had 1 foot out the door already.
It feels like so many movies or scenarios or TV shows where Cole Popovich, I believe, according to D'Amico Ryans, had a chance to go somewhere else last year. I can't remember if D'Amico said that or somebody else.
Yeah.
But Cole Popovich apparently liked being in D'Amico Ryan's team and the situation here. So he turned down an opportunity elsewhere, probably because he knew that Chris Jouster was thinking about retiring and there was just a matter of time until he got his opportunity. That's a really bad situation when you're in a problematic situation.
Mm-hmm.
That the guy, the more talented underling is kind of being held down by a guy who's just trying to bolster his pension a little bit or whatever it might be when you're the problem situation on the team.
Yeah. D'Amico Ryans has got a lot of things right in his 2 years plus as the head coach. A lot of things. He's done a great job so far. That, I don't know if it's a blind spot. You know, Bobby was a guy who he had a relationship with, and then the Strouser hire. Those are two hires that obviously didn't work out, and they're trying to fix it now.
And it's a classic thing that happens, especially when coaches are trying to put a staff together on the fly, and it's time sensitive. It's not like you're going off trying to pluck an offensive coordinator somewhere in August. You can't wait. You got to get started. And it's a classic mistake. I mean, Kubiak in the first year hired Richard Smith as a defensive coordinator. I personally was not impressed one bit by a single damn thing Richard Smith ever did. I don't know why he was a defensive coordinator. He had been a defensive coordinator in the NFL before, but his best trip was with the Dolphins when Saban was his coach. So Saban was the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not an unforgivable mistake or anything. I credit D'Amico for taking measures to rectify it after 2 years instead of letting it linger on.
Okay, here's a quote from Laramie Tunsil in this article. If you're just getting in your car, you're just tuning in, there's a big Washington Post profile on Laramie Tunsil where clearly the tone of the article is like, hey, nothing that went on in Houston was Laramie's fault, and we're just thrilled to have him here. And they are thrilled to have him there, and we'll see. He doesn't have to be the leader in that offensive line room like he was anointed here. Laramie says that the rumors of the toxicity did make him feel a certain kind of way. Quote, it did make me feel a way because our room wasn't like that. Did we play well? No. Did CJ get sacked a lot? Yes. I see where the rumors could be made up and come from, but I feel like we had a great-ass room.
I did.
Which I'm sure he did.
Wait, didn't he in this very article talk about how many problems? He said it wasn't a great room. Did he not just say that in one of the quotes?
Strouser said it. Did Laramie say it?
Oh, okay. No, Strouser said that. This is Laramie saying it.
We'll get to more Strouser.
Yeah, okay. Well, the one thing that Strouser says when he talks about him being a leader is that he didn't necessarily want to be the guy in the room who was responsible for the room, which is fair because he's not the coach. Right? But he was a captain.
He was a captain.
Yeah.
He wants to this is another quote from Strouser. Laramie wants to show up and play football and protect the quarterback. I respect that about him.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to be in charge of the offensive line room. But he does like having that C on his chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of frustrating stuff in this article.
What I hated seeing over and over again was, hey, his teammates voted him captain. Right. The offensive players vote on the offensive captains. And you're telling me that that group of slack-jawed idiots and young players knew exactly what they needed in a captain? That's like, go to any high school student council when, you know, the good-looking jock is up against the actually capable president. And I say this as a guy who was an unqualified class president for a short stretch of time before I abdicated my throne. Sometimes it's a popularity contest, you know?
Okay.
It should have been Tyler Tilling. Okay. Everybody knows that in hindsight.
I've been saying it for years.
Yeah.
Okay, two things. I need a 30 for 30 on the presidential stretch of Seth Payne at his high school. I need to know the platform that you ran on.
It was not a toxic environment, Sean. It was certainly dysfunctional.
I need to know more, and I don't think I'm going to find it out from you. I need to find Tyler Tilling is what I need to do.
We blew our budget on parties in the first
I believe
three
that.
Weeks.
It was, the second thing of what the rant that you just went on. I'm glad that you separated the young players from the slack-jawed yokels in the offensive room. I'm like, okay, when you said slack-jawed yokels, I'm like, oh, CJ's not, oh, and then you said young players. I'm like, okay, yeah. Good. Everybody who's like under the age of 25, they just don't know any better.
They don't know who they need to be led.
That's right.
Go ahead and have, go to boot camp and be sure you have the raw recruits select who their drill sergeant's going to be.
Guess what?
They're not going to make a great choice.
Well, that's what I heard. You know what I heard? Shaq Mason, slack-jawed yokel. Okay, this is the quote from this article in the Washington Post that I think is going to get people pulling over to the side of the road to throw up. The pre-snap penalties.
Oh, yeah.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I know you've seen it already. I'm just asking if you're ready to hear it again.
Yeah.
Chris Strauser had this to say about Laremy Tunsil, who had, let's refresh, 19 accepted penalties against him last year. 19 accepted penalties.
Just by way of an illustration, the really, really genuinely all-pro offensive tackles rarely have more than 4 or 5 pre-snap penalties in a season.
Yeah, it's an issue.
So whenever anybody says, well, he was just trying to get a jump on the snap count. Right. It's cheating.
Yeah.
Except the guys that are genuinely all-pro do it a lot better than Laremy did.
Yeah, I can't.
They didn't hurt their team the way Laremy did.
I've been excited for a day now for you to react to this quote on the air because I got to read it to you yesterday. This is Strauser. Laremy tried to get better at it. We definitely did have a different cadence than what he was used to. I think he would say it was not that offensive tackle friendly. It took him a while both years to get used to it.
Both years?
As if the whole thing changes.
No, but then what Chris doesn't realize is, like, you know, this was already an issue before that. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so listen. According to Chris Strauser, Laremy Tunsil is the most gifted and awesome offensive tackle in all the world, and yet he's having an issue with the snap count when nobody else is.
Right.
So it's not Laramie's fault.
Yeah.
It's the center and the snap count's fault. But meanwhile, nobody else is having that same issue.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not buying your excuse.
It wasn't that offensive tackle friendly. Like, last I checked, teams play with 2 offensive tackles.
Last I checked,
there's another one over there.
It wasn't
his name's
every,
Titus Howard, who didn't jump all the time
it
like
wasn't
Laremy.
Every Texans offensive tackle over the past 6-7 right. years that's had an issue with
it's
it.
It's one.
And it's been with multiple different centers and snap counts.
Yes.
And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a selfish penalty.
Yeah.
It is. The people that would try to defend him would explain it like I'm an idiot or something. No, Seth, you see what he's doing is he's trying to time the snap count. I know that, you idiot, but it's selfish.
Yeah.
He's doing it at the expense. And it's taken 3rd and 6 and moving it back to 3rd and 11. You know who that doesn't really hurt? It doesn't hurt Laremy Tunsil because on 3rd and 11, he's still a really, really good pass protector.
Oh, he gets to show it off.
Who it hurts is the other 10 guys on the offense.
Yeah.
It makes it harder for C.J. Stroud. It makes it harder for your rookie left guard. It makes it harder for all those guys. But it doesn't hurt Laremy Tunsil. It's selfish.
The other 10 guys on the offense, the defense is sitting over there hoping that a drive extends a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You convert a third down, you get a little bit more of a rest.
This sickens me, Chris Strauser.
Yeah.
Why did you do this interview?
Okay, well, I'm glad he did it. Because I'll tell you the one thing, if we bring it all, you know, bringing it back to the 2025 Texans,
I feel better that this guy's not leading the offensive line room anymore.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, that's Cole Popovich, from what we've heard of from him so far, from what we've heard about him so far, from being able to observe him coaching the offensive line, that looks like an offensive line coach. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if they got the bodies to make it work. I don't know if Cole Popovich is an actual good offensive line coach when he's the lead guy doing it, but I feel a whole hell of a lot better about the potential for that than reading the quotes about what was going on last year.
I've picked up a few things in Washington, and what they're saying in Washington is, we heard everybody in Houston say that Laremy Tunsil wasn't going to be a great leader, but look at him here. He's helping out Josh Connerly, the rookie offensive tackle. And it was funny because the picture the guy used was Josh Connerly in his full pads practicing, Laremy Tunsil not in pads.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He was clearly
tank top.
Practice off.
The little short shorts that he wears. No question. Okay. Well, Washington will find out. They'll find out.
He might turn the corner and just be a different dude.
We'll see.
It's not like, again, he's a really, really good pass protector. He's a so-so run blocker, but he's not swarm. Like, there's no part of him that's swarm. That's not his game, which is fine. It's fine, and you can operate in different environments. In a Cliff Kingsbury offense, that might just be fine that he's not swarm, and they might not need it. But I think for a D'Amico team, that's not the type of player ethos that he wants.
Definitely not. All right, we're going to do an emergency pedicast. We usually do it on Tuesdays at 8. Obviously, we've been doing two-hour shows the last couple of weeks, so we haven't had the chance to do one in several days. We're going to do one in just a little bit, because there's a lot to be petty about, and there's a lot of petty out there. Hell, I feel like we've warmed up for it in this segment here, talking about Laremy Tunsil and Chris Drouser. Before we do that, because I teased it, Dameon Pierce activated yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryans talking about the running back position and how it's looked so far.
Our backs have done a really good job, man. Woody Marks has stepped in, and he's made some really nice runs over the past couple of days. Jawar is playing fast. It shows he's playing, and Chubb is – he – plows behind his pads, and he's going to gain yardage. So all those guys collectively have done a really good job at the running back room.
I think that his description of Chubb right there is, and D'Amico himself has basically said that, Chubb's not the same type of athlete that he once was when he was younger and before he had this really, really bad knee injury a couple years ago. But in terms of just kind of plowing forward behind his pads, I can see where with the things that they're working on offensively, it's I don't want to, they don't like us to give away too much, obviously, but it's stuff that the offensive linemen themselves have said. It's a lot of double teams. It's a lot of just mashing and smash mouth football where it's a physical style of play. And I think that's where if Nick Chubb doesn't necessarily have the same fifth gear that he used to, that's all right. If he can still just lean forward and drive and consistently churn out positive yardage.
Yeah.
Big runs are nice, but what really the Texans needed last year was that if you're going to run on first down, you got to get at least 4 yards.
Yep.
You got to keep the line of scrimmage moving forward. And I think Chubb might still be valuable in that regard.
I think in that regard, and I think also if it's a team that has leads in the fourth quarter, is Chubb a back that can close a game for you? Like Mixon was able to do in the opener against Indianapolis. They were really leaning on him. They needed that catch from Nico to keep a drive going. And especially in that playoff game.
The Chargers game. 12 straight runs.
With Joe Mixon. So I think if Chubb can be that guy, he doesn't need to be the guy that's breaking off 75-yard runs and knocking five guys over. If he can get you 4 or 5 yards in the fourth quarter and just keep you in good down and distance situations, like you said, then I think that'll be good. Dameon Pierce getting dropped in to this. Where do you think Dameon fits in this mix right now?
I think Dameon,
because Chubb's been the ones.
If Mixon were out, I think week one, right this moment, they'd probably have Dameon Pierce and Nick Chubb do a committee affair.
Okay.
But on first and second down.
Yeah.
And then on third down, I think Woody Marks and Jawar Jordan and Ogunba Wale, depending on what the matchups are and what they want. If they need a guy for pass protection, it's one thing. If they just want some guy to get downfield and make receptions, that's another. But I think they've got options on third down.
But you're talking about week one. I mean, you just rattled off like six names of running backs.
They're going to have nine running backs on the roster.
They're not going to all make the team.
Going to make the team.
D'Amico's right. Woody Marks and Jawar Jordan have had good camps so far.
They have had good camps. I think that...
Woody's going to make the team.
Woody's going to make the team, and I think Jawar Jordan might be in a position where the Texans like him, but unless there's a rash of injuries, they're going to try to hide him on the practice squad.
Yeah.
Which, for those of you who don't know, practice squad is dicey because once you put a guy on practice squad, any team in the league can sign him like he's a free agent.
Yeah.
You have the ability to match, if another team offers something. But it's a little bit of a risk. But Juwan Jordan being a 180-pound guy, I think they'll probably, if there's enough healthy guys above him, I think they're probably going to most likely make him a practice squad.
It'd be interesting. I think there's a chance Pierce could get moved. You know, we'll see. We got to see how he fits in this system. He didn't fit in the last one.
Ogumba Wale is the interesting one because he's got – you know, there's only so much he's going to provide as a running back, but he's so good as a complete package special teams guy and a guy that you can at least rely on him to fill a role at running back. And they might end up having to make a really hard emotional decision just because I love Ogumba Wale.
Well, when we talked to Nick last week, he singled Ogumba Wale out.
Yeah.
Remember, unsolicited, singled him out as a example of a vet who just – man, you just know what you're getting out of him.
Yeah, and again, that's where, depending on how healthy Mixon is and depending on how healthy or what they think Chubb's ceiling is, the decision between Damian Pierce and Ogumba Wale might really end up being the one.
Yeah.
Because Pierce is now, by running back standards, he's not a young guy anymore. And he's had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
It's not just one or two injuries. I mean, he's been injured
every year,
including years where he's not playing a lot. And that's there. You've got young guys that you feel good about. It might be Damian Pierce versus Juwan Jordan, and how are you going to make the decision there? But if they need an all-purpose type back, if Joe Mixon's injury were to extend into the regular season, I think that's where they might say, all right, well, like at this point, we need Damian more so than we need Juwan Jordan.
Yeah, maybe. If I had to bet, I'm going to bet Damian's not on this team in week one. I'm guessing he gets moved or he gets squeezed. Because even Mixon hurt has to be on the 53-man roster when you leave camp, and then you can put him on IR or whatever it is. So that's, you know, it's a tricky puzzle to put together. All right, we haven't gotten to get petty, at least declare ourselves petty in a while now. You ready to do a petty cast?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it.
I've been waiting for this.
Yeah, let's do it here.
All bottled up.
Yeah, man. backed up full of petty.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's do this. We do this normally every Tuesday at 8 a.m. is when we get petty, but we're handing the baton over to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris at 8 a.m. today. We're back to 4 hours starting tomorrow. So let's start with this one. Mary Kay Cabot, she writes for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. She covers the Browns beat up in Cleveland and very well-respected, longtime writer. And she was speaking at the Hall of Fame this past weekend. I don't know what capacity, but she was up there speaking. And she made a crack about Bill Belichick. Here's what it sounds. She talked about covering Belichick during his Cleveland time, early in her career as a beat reporter, about how intimidating he was. Mm-hmm. And it led to this wisecrack about 2025 Belichick.
Eventually, I had to learn to stand up to him. During one of those yelling matches, I told him, if you don't have the footballs to say that to the guys, then don't say it to me. Bam. But now I totally understand why Bill gave me such a hard time. I was 28 at the time, and he just couldn't relate to a woman that old.
Yeah, a little rim shot in the background.
No, I didn't.
I think somebody, maybe Ben did, or else, yeah. So that was funny. You know, it's your classic up in front of people wisecrack that'll get the laugh from the room.
Would have been better if she wasn't so obviously reading from a.
Yeah, you know, she's not a stand-up comedian, so she gets a little bit of latitude. Obviously, got a lot of attention. And she almost seems a little bit Southern Belle about the attention that it's gotten from a lot of people.
Yeah,
Mary
I didn't
Kay
expect me to be. me making fun of Belichick's younger girlfriend.
Just a little joke.
Clear, she wasn't making fun of the girlfriend. She's making fun of Belichick.
Making fun of Belichick. But here's the thing. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, tweeted about that wisecrack.
Yeah.
And tweeted out about it, put a link up to an article about it. And on Twitter, it got reposted. Got reposted. Somebody responded to it. There was a follower that responded to the joke, being maybe out of line, I guess, or something like that. You know who reposted that response?
Jordan Hudson.
Jordan Hudson, the girlfriend.
24, 25.
Is she still 24? Yeah, she might. Yeah, whatever. Way younger than Belichick, girlfriend. Yeah. So she reposted
the response saying that that joke was out of line.
Oh, what? She just said it was out of line?
A Twitter follower responded to Florio's tweet saying that the joke was out of line.
Yeah.
Oh, and then she just reposted it. That person, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So.
That, you know what? She gets 1.5 stars for pettiness there.
Okay.
Make a comment, Jordan.
Yeah, say something.
Come on. What are you doing?
Say something.
Be sassy.
Yeah.
You know, look, Belichick's not with you because you're some haggard old energy devoid cow.
No.
You know? Be sassy.
Sassy.
Spice this thing up.
Okay, next one.
I forgot. He's with you for your brain.
Yeah. She's a philosophy major, Seth.
That's right.
Philosophy major. Next one. Johnny Manziel and Gilly, who has the $1 Million Worth of Game podcast, right? Yep. Philly guy. And Johnny Manziel. So Gilly has been going after Cam Newton since Cam Newton has been going after Jalen Hurts.
It's Gilly the Kid, isn't it?
Gilly the Kid at Gilly the Kid on Twitter if you want to find him. So Cam Newton was critical of Jalen Hurts, said he's not a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah.
Gilly, coming to Jalen Hurts' defense on social media, posted about how Cam was overrated. He posted a video of himself hugging the Lombardi trophy, thanking Jalen Hurts as if Gilly was on the team. Johnny Manziel saw the video of Gilly throwing shade at Cam and hugging the Lombardi trophy, Johnny Manziel, and said, yo, at Gilly the Kid, you may be the biggest effing loser on the planet, talking like you've effing done anything on a football field. If I see you, just know I'm going to slap the F out of you. Trust.
Yeah.
Okay, that's petty, right?
Johnny,
that's pretty good. That's better than 1.5.
At any given time, though, you never know whether Johnny is like, is he in his fighting trim or is he 137 pounds with bags under his
eyes?
We
know he's skinny.
Right, yeah.
But is it good skinny or bad skinny? All right, so Gilly saw this and replied. Now, here's what you need to picture. Gilly is in a Philadelphia Eagles jersey, and this is a direct response to Johnny Manziel, and thus Gilly's face is covered in white powder from the nose down.
Like he's Al Pacino, who just gone face down in a mound of cocaine.
And the video started with him going, Johnny, you must look like this. And the camera swings over in front of him. Here's the crescendo of Gilly's 3-minute message. We've only got about a minute of it. His message to Johnny Manziel.
Now, let me tell you something, Johnny. I need you to check in the AA, Alcohol Anonymous, and I need you to check the f*** out of AAB, African American Business, Johnny. This shit had nothing to do with you. Sit your dumb ass down somewhere. You hear me? Now, Cam said what he said about Jalen. I told Cam he did something you couldn't do, win a Super Bowl. And then Cam, big, goofy, extra sensitive ass, started talking personal shit. So you and Cam could both sit y'all super goofy asses down somewhere. Cocaine Johnny and big and sensitive. You big sassy ass. Sit your dumb ass down somewhere. I don't know what the you got going on. But I told you, neither one of y'all could with Jalen. And then you talk about, I'm the biggest loser. You ain't did nothing on the football field. Neither did you, Johnny. You was in a league for 2 weeks. They sent you to the Australian Kangaroos. I think you did 2 years with the Lithuanian Bombers or something. What you talking about? You ain't this shit either. Get the fuck out of here, Johnny. Right.
Love how he's treating the Canadian Football League like it's on the other side of the universe.
The Lithuanian Bombers.
The Lithuanian Bombers.
That was more about that. That was like a European football league. World League of American Football, whatever it was. That's one rule that I feel like they need to bring back the rookie symposium for is just don't get in any kind of social media battle with a rapper.
No,
you're gonna lose at some point. You still have your fans behind you saying that Gilly the Kid is an idiot or whatever. You're gonna lose. You're not gonna be able to compete with Gilly the Kid with a face full of fake cocaine.
The visual,
on his face.
In re-listening to that, I'm like, on a scale of 1 to 10, the humor in listening to it is like a good 7.5. It's a 9.5 when you see the visual of Gilly just covered, like baby powder covered all over his face.
Johnny, I feel like Johnny needs to stay off social media as much as possible.
Yeah, I agree.
And
with that.
He probably makes good money on social media.
Probably so.
That's hard. It's like Antonio Brown. I don't think the healthiest thing for him is to be on social media all the time. But at the same time, I don't know how he's going to earn a living without social media.
It's like, kind of funny, too.
He makes really good money on social media, yeah.
For sure, for sure.
It's a, there's never been a better time to be a person that really, for your own mental health, shouldn't be on social media.
Yeah.
To capitalize on being on social media.
It is, man. Yeah. It is. All right. Mike McDaniel versus Tyreek Hill. That's another one.
A
player on his team.
Yes.
This was Tyreek Hill earlier this week when he was asked, what would your recommendation be for short yardage situations for the Dolphins?
Take Devon out on third down. What? You want to? You? That's my honest opinion. If it's third and short, he's not a power back. I be telling him that in the locker room, but he's a power back. I love Devon though, but if I'm being honest, like, that's why you got Jalen Wright. That's why you got Ollie Gordon. For those kind of situations.
I guess Devon is obviously Devon Achane.
Yeah, that's
who is their best running back.
Basically questioning play calling and player usage. And
of the head coach.
The thing I love about Tyreek Hill, just like the name of his podcast, it had to be said. It needed to be said. No, that's... Again.
It does not need to be
said. Just because you think it's true or it's your opinion or just because something is definitely objectively true, it does not always have to be said out
Correct.
Loud or publicly. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's but I'm glad he did it for the pettycast.
You know, I am too. I'm 100% I'm thrilled. Mike McDaniel had a response to this. Mm. Here was Mike McDaniel when it was brought to his attention that Tyreek Hill was giving his opinions on how the Dolphins should handle short yardage situations on offense.
I thought it was genius reporting by Tyreek, seeing how we had a short yardage period that very day that you guys were in attendance for. And his suggestion was, I guess, congruent with Coach Stutesville. That's exactly how we repped the backs in that short yardage period that very day. But we thought it was funny that he reported the news that wasn't news on that practice day in that short yardage period that you guys were all there too for.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he thinks it's funny.
It's all cleared up now. Yeah. Now I totally understand and get whatever the hell you're talking about.
Yeah. So that was Mike McDaniel's response. Mike McDaniel had another quote that was getting some traction yesterday. He did the thing where someone comes in and you walk into a room and someone says, good day. And Mike McDaniel did the thing, good day. It's a great day, you know. So I think D'Amico does that. D'Amico, you know, we played in our open. Great day. Here was Mike McDaniel on why it was such a great day yesterday.
You should stand corrected. Good morning. False. Great morning. Let's go.
Why great? What makes this one great?
Because we're another day closer to death.
I was thinking about this yesterday. You know how like you look forward to things?
Yeah.
Like to me, I always look forward to vacations. Like part of going on a vacation is the anticipation of going on the vacation. It sounds like death is the vacation for Mike McDaniel.
That's why they call it the dirt nap.
It's one day. Everybody loves a good nap.
Yeah. You're free from all the troubles of this
world. I never really thought about it until Mike McDaniel said that yesterday.
Yeah. That's why I know. That's why people talk about the, you know.
Got to be more nihilistic.
Yeah. One day closer to death.
Yeah, okay.
If you take the most positive spin, it's like, yeah, I'm appreciating this day because I am one day closer to death. I got to really be sure I appreciate this day.
Well, people do say, like, you know, you go and you know, if you're religious, you meet your Lord. And Savior, and
it's a memento mori, Sean. You remember that one day you're going to die.
Memento mori.
It's what they used to have when a Roman emperor would be named emperor, and they would have the parade. There was a person that would sit beside him, whispering that in his ear, like basically, remember that one day you will die.
Okay,
that this isn't like this. It's all transient, and it, like, don't get too high with the highs.
Okay,
don't get too low with the lows. It's just like, remember, no matter how much praise and love and everything else that everybody is heaping on you, at the end of the day, we all end up in the same
place. It's all well and good. If you would just stop whispering it to me when we go to an Astros game. I'm just trying to enjoy the game.
It can be a very positive thing, memento mori.
Sure.
But you got to spend some time with it.
Yeah.
It's depressing at first. I always tell you, like, you got to think about death and mortality a little bit every day.
Yep.
But just for a little bit.
Yes.
Don't sit in a dark room all day thinking
that's
about
bad.
It.
Yeah, don't
do
that.
The more time you spend with it, the more comfortable you get
when
with it
arrives.
And it just kind of liberates you to be like, oh, yeah, that's right.
No,
I'm
for
die
sure.
Someday.
Like the doorbell rings one day and you open it, it's the Grim Reaper, and you're like, hey, what's up, Grim?
Yes.
Yeah. Mr. Reaper. Sorry.
This is where I test myself on it, is when we get rough turbulence on an airplane.
Uh-huh.
I like my ideal would be that every day I wake up and basically be like, yep, I'm prepared to die today.
Yeah.
And then like that, it's liberating in a lot of ways. So on an airplane, when it gets really dicey, and every now and then when you see the flight attendants get nervous, check myself and I'm like, am I ready to go? Yeah, I'm good.
You stand up and you yell, memento mori.
Don't worry, everybody.
Yeah.
We're all
memento mori
here.
Six sipper tyrannus.
Yes.
I mean, memento mori. What am I saying? Hey, I got one more petty. Ben, I know we're up against it, but since we're on the Dolph, I've got like five more petties. We had so much petty in here today. We might need to do an emergency one tomorrow again. As long as we're talking about the Dolphins, here was Tua, I guess, showing off for the media.
Yeah, this isn't the first time he's done
this thing, like trying to show off how hard it is to call a play in an NFL game. Here it is.
I can give you guys a play, and then if you guys want to repeat it after me, as if you guys were in the huddle, you guys can. All right, should I go once or twice saying it?
Once.
All right, we got north right clamp, south fox, H-top, pass 38, top Gumby, XP, sweat. Let's go. Anyone?
I got north right on clamp.
Sounds
like a false start to us.
Yeah, sounds like a pre-snap penalty to me. Oh, my gosh.
That's all right, listen to it. I don't know what point you're trying to prove. And it's like somebody who's fluent in Japanese getting up and saying, reeling off a sentence in Japanese and then, hey, speak it back to me. Not so smart, are you? Like, all right. Way to stack the decks there. Yeah, injury-prone concussion garden. He's a concussion garden is what he is.
He's a concussion garden,
Have you hey, Tua, let's have you do that after your next concussion. That's going to be your concussion test. Hey, Tua. Recite this play for me. I'm going to say it once or twice.
And he's going to go, memento mori, memento mori.
Tua, is it, what day of the week is it?
Oh, man.
And then I want you to replace this.
Here. I'm watching this thing, and I'm like, man, do not let him get away with bullying you, media, all right? If they gave any of you as much time as he gets to study it, you too could recite one play out of an NFL playbook.
He was having fun with it.
I guess. I didn't see the context around it. It's a petty cast. What can I say? All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Final.
In light of the petty cast, I have zero. Listen to her. Listen to her. No concussion. You happen to be lucky enough to play in an era when they actually diagnose these things.
Yeah, that's
all right?
True.
The vast majority of us had no choice but to play through those concussions.
Yeah.
While getting screamed at by coaches who were upset about us making mental errors the entire time.
Yes.
What are you, stupid today, Payne?
My favorite.
I feel kind of dumb.
My favorite part of this whole thing is you breaking the fourth wall by looking into the camera as if Tua is watching this YouTube right now. That was tremendous.
You know, we didn't get back in the day.
Oh, man.
9 months off for a head injury.
All right. things that we are looking for at practice today. Also, some depth chart news in the AFC South, one of which is really, really funny. And in Cleveland, too. We'll get to that as we get ready to hand things off to Texans Training Camp Live at the top of the hour. Stay there. All right. Payne and Pendergast, we will be out of practice. We're heading out there shortly. Practice starts at 9 o'clock Houston time. We will be updating you on what we saw at 12:40 on In the Loop.
Ah.
When I say we, me and Seth both, we'll go back here to our studio in our Airbnb and dial into In the Loop at 12:40, The Drive at 3:40, and then the guys on Area 45 at 7:40. Hopefully fewer technical issues tonight than we had last night.
Yeah, we had some technical issues.
We were
last
like tin
night.
Can and string last night.
Luckily,
with the guys.
My voice is loud enough that they were hearing me through Sean's
on my
headset.
Microphone.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah,
enough to do the segment, I guess.
Yeah, we fixed that issue.
We
so
did
smooth sailing.
Smooth, nothing but smooth sailing the rest of the way. So we got that, and you've got Kalen Bullock. You're going to interview today.
Yes, I'll be interviewing Kalen Bullock. You know what I did with Kamari Lassiter yesterday, and I just still need to kind of edit this up into video form.
Yeah.
I had him take me through a couple of his interceptions from last year. I love it's one of my favorite things in the world to listen to, and it's partly because of you. And John Harris have both asked guys, you in the post game, John Harris on Texans radio, when a defensive back explains and talks you through a play.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm fascinated by defensive backs because they're doing so much. The good ones are, they're doing so many things mentally while also running way faster than almost every other human being in the world. It's like race car driving.
Totally.
Like it's just the way they're able to function mentally and what they're looking at and keying on, it's fascinating to me. So I'm going to pick a couple plays to have Kalen Bullock talk me through.
I told
Kamari, talk to me like I'm a high school defensive back, mm-hmm. and you're kind of coaching up what you're seeing here and everything.
Yeah, it was a good conversation. So you got Hawk. Yes, no, you got Locke yesterday and Hawk today. That's their sort of tandem name, Hawk and Locke. That's what they go by. They're inseparable, the two of them. Kalen Bullock.
Sounds like
and
a gun store or
Kamari
something.
Lassiter
Hawk
does.
And Locke.
Hawk and Locke, baby.
Yeah.
And I've got Jalen Petrie today. I had C.J. Gardner-Johnson yesterday. He was really good.
They're loading you up with personalities. I think they're trying to give you the personalities. They're trying to give me like the guys that I might want to just actually talk
like
X's
the technicians.
And O's with.
Yeah.
And it's genuinely an education. I like it because it's an education for me. I don't know as much about defensive back play as I feel I should.
Not so much for me. I know everything about it.
That's
I'm pretty
true.
Good.
Yeah. I should pick.
They have given us just defensive back so far. If you're going to pick one room to give us guys out of, that's a pretty good one on this team.
Yeah.
That's a good room. Good personalities.
One thing everybody always says about this show.
Big personalities.
No, that you can tell. Like, those are the guys that probably know defensive back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Some quick news from around the NFL. Depth chart news. AFC South. Daniel Jones. I want to get your reaction to these. Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson, co-first string in Indianapolis.
Good.
They are equally sucky.
You know, we live in this world where everybody wants to have a starting quarterback. Oh, you want to have your Super Bowl champion MVP quarterback.
Yeah.
But I'm not afraid to ask, why not have two quarterbacks? If one is good, why not have two?
Right.
Some people will say if you've got two starting quarterbacks, you've got none at all.
I would say that here.
Most of those people are dead already because they've been saying it for like 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they couldn't possibly keep saying it because it's true. It's because they're afraid to think outside the box.
Yeah.
Not like the Indianapolis Colts. They live outside the box.
They do. Do they ever?
Except for the previous owner.
They meet.
He's in a box.
He's...
What?
No, it's true. It's factual, I think. I mean, I don't
know. He's not living in a box.
No.
It's quite the opposite, but still.
Yeah, that's true. The mere fact that Anthony Richardson is co-first string with anybody right now tells you the direction that pick from 2 years is going. Like, he's picked two picks after C.J. Stroud, and he's co-QBs with a guy who got run out of New York for being overpriced a couple years ago.
The funniest thing about it, and the thing that's the most fun, because it's like an inside joke with everybody else in the AFC South, and it's happened already again this training camp, is that Anthony Richardson is very capable of making some incredible throws.
Yeah.
We've seen it. He's made them against the Texans.
Year. Yeah.
And yet, but he completes 50% of his passes. So already this year, there's been a highlight throw by Anthony Richardson that was posted and immediately in the comments, oh, I thought Anthony Richardson wasn't accurate. Right. That's like you don't understand the meaning of the word
he's
accurate.
Not.
Right.
Yeah. The other three throws to go with that one sailed into the sand.
If I'm playing darts and I hit one bullseye but murder three waitresses with the other darts, I'm not
an accurate
darts thrower.
By definition, you're not accurate.
Unless I was intending to murder those waitresses.
In which case, you're a sniper. Travis Hunter listed in Jacksonville, supposed to play both ways this year, listed as first string wide receiver and second string cornerback. Is this a failure of the magnificent Gladstone's plan to revolutionize football?
Well, because I think it's a hint that he's going to be playing wide receiver predominantly.
Yes.
And then have less plays at defensive back.
I think so, right?
I would guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sean, we don't know. We're in uncharted territory here. They're in the business of revolutionizing the game of football.
And if we know anything out of the magnificent Gladstone, whatever the solution is going to get pulled out of his lapel. Dove.
You know, some boring dudes like Bill Belichick Phil Jackson or something, they might say something like, hey, we're focused on the next game.
Yeah.
That's what our focus is.
Nah.
Not the Magnificent
Not Maggie
Stone.
G, man.
Their focus is on revolutionizing the game of football and resetting the expectations about what is possible.
Yes. Belichick and Phil Jackson are messing around with county government. Yeah. And meanwhile, Magnificent Gladstone is taking over the galaxy.
I feel like Phil Knight might have said something more like Gladstone.
I definitely would have. All right. Looking forward to practice today, my friend. Should be fun.
Me too. Yeah, it's I'm gonna dominate.
Yes.
I'm not gonna lose a damn rep out there.
At Seth C. Payne, at Sean T. Pendergast, follow us. We'll be on there and we'll be back on today, 12:40 with the guys in the midday, 3:40 with the drive in the afternoon, and then with the night fellas, Area 45 at 7:40. Just remember 40, 12:40, 3:40, 7:40, and we've got you covered here on Sports Radio 610. We'll hand it over to Texans Training Camp Live.